Hey guys, welcome to Adulting with Autism, the podcast where we dive into the roller coaster of adulthood through a neurodiverse lens. I'm April Ratchford, your friendly occupational therapist mom, proudly on the spectrum and raising an amazing young adult son with autism. Join us as we share stories, tips, and laughs, offering a supportive space for anyone navigating life's twists and turns. Grab your drink of choice, no judgment, and let's embark on this journey together. This is Adulting with Autism. Hey guys, welcome back to the Adulting with Autism podcast. I just wanted to tell you guys, I appreciate all the downloads and the love you've been giving me. I just want to get information out there for you guys to live independently and also help your parents transition. I also want to apologize for being late on episodes. It's been a busy day in the OT world, and getting to this podcast has been a hard thing to do to balance working full time. I also want to wish blessings and thoughts to my listeners in Taiwan. I saw there was an earthquake in your area, and I hope that you and your families are safe. And to this episode, I have a question for you. Do you know how to tell your story? And what I mean by that is everyone else has been telling your story to you, but can you tell your story in your own words? That's what my next guest, Erin Rogers, does. She teaches people how to tell their stories in their words, whether it's quirky or serious, but to be comfortable in their own skin. Erin is a storyteller, writer, and workshop facilitator. She loves to help others and find and share their stories. She has worked with organizations such as Unifor, the Ontario Federation of Labor, Engineers Canada, and others as well. She also performs private coaching for individuals wishing to connect strongly with audiences for speeches, presentations, and keynotes. She's created and presented original storytelling webinars and have been the secret weapon for clients hoping to make original shareable content by helping them shape, present, and film their stories. She is also a co-founder of the Pathfinders Collective. The collective has produced the storytelling anthologies Bold and Escape. And this year, coming out April 17th, a third book in the anthology is called Clarity, Stories About the Moment That Changed It All, the Pathfinders Collective. I'll link those three books in the show notes. So here's my guest. Give her a warm welcome, Erin Rogers.
Hi, I'm here a bit early. I hope that's okay.
That is perfect.
Oh my God, I'm obsessed with your hair.
Oh, thank you. I'm obsessed with your hat that says therapy.
There we go. What a team.
I was reading your bio and it's so funny that you said, yeah, I'm neurodiverse. And I found out that I was queer in my
30s. Yeah. Are we on the same page that way?
Unfortunately. No. I am not, but my son and fiance are.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, there's space for everyone, but I'm so excited to have this space to talk. This is going to be so fantastic.
Yay! So welcome to Adulting with Autism.
Hi, I'm so glad to be here.
I want you to tell all my friends out here a little bit about yourself.
Fantastic. Well, my name is Erin. I'm from Toronto, Canada. I am a storytelling coach and writer, in general weirdo, professional weirdo, I would say. I discovered various things about myself that I didn't know in the last 10 years or so. Several of those things everybody else already knew. I am queer. I identify as bisexual. I tell people that I don't use the term pansexual because when I was dating just men, I dated too many men who seemed like they were Peter Pan and wouldn't grow up. So I don't use the term pan. Whatever term people use is great, but that's not the one for me. I have ADHD. I have autism. I am autistic. I don't know what I tend to use the experience first, like over people first language, but again, whatever people do is valid. I like to sew. I like to make friends. I like to talk. So this is a dream for me. All of these things all in one. What?
You are delightful.
Thank you. So are you. I'm so excited.
So a lot of kids on the spectrum here often get their stories told to them and don't understand how to tell their story. So how can they find their story and be able to express their story without feeling so anxious about it?
That is a great question. Well, I will say I don't often work with kids, but I do work with younger people. So I'll say that the things that I usually say to adults, because kids are very smart and usually they're like, it's the same advice. Like, you could just talk to me like I am an adult. For me, a lot of it is taking control of your story, because you can't really control how other people treat you, unfortunately. So I find things like writing down your experiences every day and how you feel and how things feel in your body, because people will say, oh, well, you're not really that upset, or you're not really angry, or you're not really whatever. If you feel it, it doesn't matter what other people are telling you. It's how you feel. You can't really, people might try, but you can't really argue with how someone feels. So what I tell everyone I work with to do is keep track of how you're feeling every day. Journaling can be a lot for people, but how you feel, your memories, your experiences, especially if later people are going to go, well, you know, you say this, you know, like, this wasn't the experience. You can actually go back. And I find, for me, that's one of the most helpful things, because feeling like I can't trust my experiences because someone else is saying something else, that's the thing I find the hardest. People can say what I'm saying, like, they disagree with me, but the idea of, like, I can't trust my own experiences is very, very difficult for me. And also to just remember, and this is maybe a little bit simplistic, that you are the expert in your own life. Everyone else is seeing it from outside. So first of all, that classic thing that people are often said, don't compare your insides to other people's outsides, but also know that you are the person that knows the most about what you're experiencing. That doesn't mean you don't have to ever listen to anyone else, because it's very easy if you're feeling a way, like if I'm feeling very anxious, everything gets kind of absorbed into that anxiety. I have, and I know a lot of neurodiverse people deal with a lot of anxiety. So having an outsider, like a trusted friend, someone say, hey, is it possible that what you're feeling right now is anxiety and it's not exactly what's happening? Maybe this discussion with you had with a friend, they're not upset with you. You're just anxious, so your mind is grabbing everything. And that's also part of the reason I love journaling, because when you write it down or put it on a computer, it gives you a little bit of distance and it helps you find and understand your story and also know sort of some of the outside things that might be happening. So if for my anxiety, I will spiral out. And then when I see it written down, I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'm not quite right about that. Maybe part of that is my anxiety. So I will say that is one of the greatest things that you can do, is start writing to take control.
That is an excellent answer.
Thank you so much.
I've never heard journaling be explained like that.
It's been such a helpful tool for me. And also, I will say one of the things, and this might seem a little strange, but it's really embracing what you're interested in without any shame. So for example, I love TV and I love comedy. So for a very long time, especially as someone who was socialized as a woman, as a young girl, there was a lot, I got a lot of messaging as, I'm not supposed to be, that's a boy thing. Hopefully it's better than it was when I was a kid in the 80s, but there was a lot of, it's a boy thing. And embracing the things that make me me without shame. One of the things that finding out I was neurodiverse gave me is to sort of a little bit of permission. And so if I could go back to little me and tell her something, is to just have permission to be myself. And that is part of, for me, taking control of my own story about, I am this person. This is what I like. This is what makes me feel the most comfortable. I have a book that I'm pointing to. You can't see. It's on my bookshelf of compliments that people have given me. And I used to be very embarrassed about that. But when I'm really spiraling anxiety-wise, that's a tool that's very helpful for me. And so finding the things that were helpful for me in particular were also a part of me finding my own story and finding myself. I became sort of the hero of my own story. And just like different heroes have different tools, there are tools that work for me and there's tools that don't.
So how did you come across making your podcast Storyteller?
Oh, for making my work? So
yes.
What I do is I am a storytelling coach. I have been in comedy for a lot of years, and I did really fun, different stand up and that sort of thing. And then I discovered storytelling. And then I started a show. So it was, I saw it and I wanted to kind of create my own version of that. So I will say for anyone, whatever age you are, because I talk to people, you know, I've talked to people's kids that are like 11 years old, and I've talked to people who are 75 years old, and they're like, well, I would love to do this thing, or I love writing. I love whatever the thing is, but I couldn't do it myself. And I am here to tell you, you can. Can you make $1 million with it? Maybe not. But if you want something, if you want to create something, especially creatively, especially now, that is possible. There is a chance for, like, if you can dream it and you're willing to put the hard work into it, you can do that. And so I have had stage shows. I've done a solo show. I'm part of a collective that's put out three collections of people's personal stories. And that was all because one day I had had an idea and I was like, I don't know if I could do this. Well, what if I put in the hard work? And it's not all me. I've had partners in almost everything I've done. I'm no longer afraid to ask for help. I was for a long time. But if you're willing to put in the work and you're willing to make some mistakes, because April, let me tell you, I have. And they have been kind of embarrassing sometimes. But all of that builds. And it's magic.
So for my son, he absolutely hates to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm with him.
I keep telling him that's how you learn. So
yes.
For people out there that is like, they're stuck on this and
yeah.
He's still very rigid in his thinking. How can they get over that? You just gotta fly and sometimes you drop.
Yes. Well, I will say one of my mottos in life is show the seams, because the way you get to something, I sew a lot. And so there's like a bunch of parts that don't look great. If, for example, if you turn something over or you look on the inside, it does not look great. And also some of my stitching does not always look great, but it turns into something beautiful. And so that is part of the process, is the stuff that doesn't go well helps you get to the next thing. And I will say, as I'm saying this, I'm like, yeah, cool, but it feels bad. Like, I don't like, I would love to wake up like a Disney princess and then just everything's perfect and birds sing to me and I sing a beautiful song and everyone just thinks I'm great. But the other thing about a Disney princess is all kinds of things happen to them. I always think about how perfect they are and I forget about all the ways they don't do things correctly and other people don't accept them and all of those things. The mistakes are what make us ourselves. And also, as someone who tells stories, let me tell you, making a mistake is going to be a really funny story at some point. Maybe not now, maybe 10 years from now, but it'll be a real funny story one of these days.
So how old do you usually work with people with storytelling coaching? Do you do all ages or primarily like young adult on up?
Mm-hmm. It's usually adults. I've done a very small amount of work with young people, usually teens. I would love to do more. That's not been the people that are reaching out lately, but I have also, you know, I've worked with people, my friends' kids and that sort of thing, but it's usually adults. kids have a lot of great stories, but for the kind of storytelling I do, it is often more like sort of looking back at your experiences with some time so you can see how they've shaped you and how you've changed. But I really think those skills, whatever age you are, giving your, like, sort of making yourself, like I was saying, like the hero of your story and seeing that it's all part of getting you to somewhere, I think is a wonderful tool.
Like, how has storytelling helped you mentally besides kind of quelling your anxiety? Mm-hmm.
Well, that has definitely been a big part of it. It's also helped me to unmask because I, for years, partly aware of the way I was pretending to be a certain way. And there were a lot of things I wasn't aware of. Like, I did not realize I was a queer person, which is wild because everyone else knew. And people just thought for some reason that I was not dating non-men. So there was a bunch of stuff that was actually hidden from me that telling my own story started to give me some distance of being like, wait a second, I'm noticing patterns in my life. And I am not a mental health professional, despite my hat that says therapy. I'm not a mental health professional, but I find that for me, part of the way my brain works is patterns. And so stories started to help me find those patterns and started to unlock truths in my life. Wait a second. Maybe I'm queer, which has made my life, it's just expanded it because I had all this shame and I didn't know the source of it. I didn't grow up with homophobic family members. I don't know if it was like in the water. I don't know where the shame came from. Societal, I guess. But I had a lot of shame to unpack. And also, because you start with storytelling, being vulnerable, I started having these levels of friendship that I didn't know I would ever have. Because once you know someone's story, you just know them at a deeper level. I can't remember whose quote it was, but there was someone that said, if you can hear, you could fall in love with almost anyone if you could hear their story. Because that's the real person that you're getting to know through story.
So say there's someone and they want to go off to college. Mm-hmm. And this is their first time being on their own. Mm-hmm. And college is definitely not like high school where it kind of just ushers you into being in relationships. How would you feel comfortable going up to someone they don't even know to just kind of get out there and see how the waters are?
Oh, I love that. Especially because that was when I went to university. There's like more difference between what that we call college and university here. But I was like, oh no, now I have to talk to people. How am I going to do it? And so for me, one of the greatest things to do is ask someone else questions, because they'll start telling you about themselves, about stories, and then you can do that in like back to them. So one of the things I love to do is, and then what? Because you're encouraging people, you want to hear from them. And I will also say, as someone with anxiety, one of the greatest things I ever learned, because eye contact can be difficult for me, is if you make eye contact with kind of like right between their eyebrows, it feels like eye contact without you having to stare them right in the eyes. And you can even go back and forth, because for me, that was one of the things, is I'm going to have to just make eye contact with a stranger. Like, no, thank you. Can I just go home? So being interested in people, in my opinion, is one of the greatest things. And one of what I would call the hack for that is, if you could already start, like if there's a club or something, then you already know you have something in common. Like, I love anime movies. I'm currently wearing a sweatshirt from Miyazaki. I'm going to mispronounce that. Sorry, Miyazaki. A Miyazaki film. So that, if I went to like an anime club, I already have a little bit of that already. And I will also say, this is my maybe silly hack. Wear a piece of clothing that displays something about you. some sort of conversation piece, because I guarantee you other people are anxious too. And if you give them something to talk to you about, then that can take some of the anxiety out of it.
That is brilliant. I never thought of that.
It's the thing is, like, I find for everyone has anxiety, and just realizing that about other people. And because I get very trapped in, like, oh, everyone's going to think I'm weird. I am weird. Everyone's going to think I'm weird. I can't do this. What if I say the wrong thing? Just remembering, probably, especially if you're starting at like college, probably everyone's in that same position. And just having that feeling of, like, I bet they feel the way I feel. What if I make it easy for them? Then they'll make it easy for me.
Oh my gosh. I wish I had interviewed you first. So what about young adults that kind of know what they want to do, but they're not sure what they're going to do, and they can't find their way? Like, my son says he wants to be a video game programmer,
mm-hmm.
but hates programming.
Yeah.
Or graphic design, but he's like, I don't draw.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're supposed to just do it. But he seems like he's wanting to be handheld, and how can other parents kind of get them to just let go?
Well, I will say one of the things is, and I can't speak from a parenting perspective, but maybe this will help with parents as well, is that, like, it's taken me a while to get here. I'm a professional storytelling coach. It's as if something whispered into my ear one day and I found what I want. Like, it was like heaven's light shone on me and I was like, this is it. But it took me a while, and it took me a lot of trying a little bit of this and trying a little bit of that. And I will say the greatest piece of advice I can give anyone is that anything you do, even if it's not the right thing, is putting you closer to the right thing. You're learning skills. You're learning how to work with other people. Some of the most interesting people I have ever met didn't know what they wanted to be for a long time. And they just started taking lessons from life. They were like, you know what is missing? Someone working in an office, they're like, you know what is missing? I find, like, this lighting is so overwhelming. If only there could be a different type of lighting. You know, I don't know if that exists yet. If anyone is out there and is like a lighting designer, maybe you could create lighting that doesn't hurt your eyes in offices. But they start to just, they think differently. And so I think that especially for neurodiverse people, thinking differently is really a gift in a lot of ways. Complicated gift. You know, sometimes it feels like, you know, if you're getting a Christmas gift and someone gives you all warm socks, you're like, great, thanks. I think sometimes it can feel a bit like that. But also, those warm socks are really helpful when it's wintertime. So being observant and learning from people will get you to where you want to go. Again, I am not a person who, my goal in life is to have a huge amount of money. If that's what people's goals are, then it's a different journey. And, like, that's cool. That's valid. But what I wanted to do was find something that fit me, that I was excited about, that I felt like I was giving back. And so I found that, but it took me, you know, I was going to be a stand-up comic professionally. I worked as a law clerk for a little while. I've done a bunch of different things, and it has made me very unique and able to do this job that, like, was sort of invented. Like, when I was in high school, no one was like, well, maybe one day you can be a storytelling coach. That wasn't a thing. So, yeah, I think it is just trusting in yourself and having patience, and also always being willing to learn, especially even if you have, like, a whole, but if your son was a, like, a super programmer, programmed every day, and then started a job and was like, oh, I have to learn this new programming language. Oh, I don't like that. That's not going to be as strong as someone that's like, oh, willing to learn a new thing. The best thing, in my opinion, is always being willing to learn and willing to listen. And you'll be amazed where you end up. Because a lot of people, even if I know lots of people who are going to be lawyers and doctors. Some of them were lawyers and doctors. And then they realized that actually wasn't the right fit for them. You never know.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what is the best part of being a storyteller?
Oh, that's tough because there's a bunch of things. So one, for me, the storytelling itself, I love knowing that a story has resonated with someone. I love when people feel less alone because other people have done that for me and it feels like paying it forward. I'll also admit that I really love getting a big laugh because I have a comedy background. But also just as a storytelling coach, when people find something or are willing to push themselves to be a little bit more truthful or vulnerable, that is a beautiful thing. People discovering something about themselves as they tell a story is, sorry, I'm just, should not have had a ginger ale this morning, apparently. I was like, oh, my stomach's feeling weird. And now my stomach's taking revenge. Anyways, but yeah, to me, the most beautiful thing about storytelling is the connection that it gives and the ability for people to be their full true self, even if it's for 10 minutes on a stage. Because when you start to feel that, it'll change your life. It doesn't always mean that that's what you're going to pursue, but there is something about someone sharing that is magic, not just for the person speaking, but also for the audience. One of the things I say to people a lot is the thing about storytelling as an art form is if you're a performer, you get to feel seen. It feels great. That's why people love the spotlight. But with a storytelling show, because someone is being so truthful about themselves and they're telling their emotions to you and you feel like you're coming along with them, it's not just that the teller feels seen, the audience feels seen as well. And that, again, it feels like I'm in a movie. It feels magical. And the fact that I get to do this, truly, if I woke up tomorrow and it was all a dream, one, I'd be disappointed, but two, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. What a beautiful dream.
Was there any time when you found that you were neurodiverse that you're not sure that you can find your place in the world, that you're like, I know I'm meant to be here, but I don't know why. I don't know my why.
I'll be honest, every day, every single day. And sometimes it's for 2 minutes. And sometimes it's for the whole day. And I've just learned to be patient with it because I'm a person that people will tell, they're like, oh, I've never told anyone this before. I hope this is okay, which is a typical Tuesday for me. People tell me all kinds of stuff. But I think most people are not quite sure what their place is in the world and if they're making the right decisions. And it's just part of being a human being. I really love the show Drag Race with RuPaul, and he talks about the inner saboteur that will tell you you're doing the wrong thing, that will tell you everyone's judging you, will tell you all these things. And a lot of times when I'm feeling the most like, oh no, I'm doing the wrong thing, that's usually a good sign, actually. It's usually a sign I'm trying something new and really challenging myself. Now, if it feels awful, if I feel like I often say there's a difference between stretching yourself and like harming yourself. If you're exercising, you can stretch that muscle and build that muscle. But if it's too soon, you can hurt yourself. So if I feel like, I don't know if I feel like I'm doing the right thing or I'm not sure if I belong or that sort of thing, that's different than like, there's like, I can feel in my body if I feel basically unsafe or like I'm hurting myself with my decisions. And I personally, as much as I love challenging myself, if I have that feeling where I might be hurting myself, I'd rather take myself out of that situation or experience and then come back later. And I think so much of it is just trusting yourself, but also realizing that inner saboteur will tell you things. And so like kind of listen to it with one ear. What is it saying? And then feel with your body. Okay. Does that feel like it is just like a spooky voice or does it feel like it's protecting me from something that's not going to be good for me?
Oh, I was so unprepared for
no, not April. Here's the, well, first of all, thank you so much. And second of all, I think about this stuff. That's one of the advantages of my job is I get to have these kind of conversations all the time. And also having a lot of people in my life who are sensitive, kind, deep thinking people, some neurodivergent, some not, is you get to have these kind of conversations.
What's the one thing you would like people on the spectrum to know about getting out there and actually adulting on your own?
I think one of the is there's no right way to do it. So here's a thing that I have literally never told anyone. I love the old show Columbo. Do you remember Columbo with the detective? He's kind of rumpy.
Yeah, vaguely.
Yeah. So I love that show. I paid someone I know who can do a very good Columbo impression to do daily affirmations for me. He recorded some daily affirmations and I listened to it every day. Now, part of the reason I don't tell people about it very much, except for friends that I trust and like, I clearly trust you and I trust this podcast, is that I made the mistake of telling the wrong person and they made fun of me. And that's fine. People do that. But I felt really sensitive about it. And I stopped using it for a while. And it was so strange because I was like, who cares? This is someone who doesn't, it was like, I don't know, someone's boyfriend or whatever. Like, I don't even really care about this person's opinion. But my shame popped up in this level. And once I started writing about it, I was like, oh, where's the source of this? So one of the tools I use is what I call five whys. And I probably got it from some kind of mental health care professional. And I will, if I feel shame or it mostly shame, I will ask why. Like, why am I feeling this way? And then I keep asking, I do five whys because it usually gets me to the center of something. And it's usually like, oh, you know, I was bullied or I think people are going to not like me or whatever it is. And then just kind of look at, okay, well, what can I do about it? Or why, what, how is that affecting me? But I do the five whys first because I still have a lot of shame. I've come a long way, but I've just realized, and I'm hoping young people now are going to have a lot less. That's one of my deepest wishes is that everyone carries around a lot less shame. But that there is no right or wrong way to be an adult as long as you are being a kind, decent person. If it is not hurting anyone else for you to, I don't know, dance around in your underpants to music as soon as you go home and, you know, like eat salad over the sink, whatever, it's not harming anyone, go for it. Do what works for you.
How can people... Because I know there's some people out there that have like childhood trauma, like bullying, and kind of transform it into a story to make them stronger.
Well, I will say for me, part of what got me to be able to use stories to kind of let that go was doing different types of therapy. That's not, I know it's not for everyone and different therapies work for different people. But I will say one of the things for stuff like bullying is, in my experience, part of it is time. Because so I often tell people, write down that story, but you don't have to share it yet. If it's too hurtful and it's hurting you, you don't need to share it yet. But like put it on a piece of paper, put it in a notebook so it lives somewhere. So it's no, I don't have to hold it around in my brain because it's sitting there on that shelf. And know that it might take you a while. And also in my experience, a lot of people, and especially for friends of mine who were socialized as male, it's the idea of like, well, why aren't you over that yet? Walk it off. It's not that easy for all of us. And so having patience to be like, you know what? Some of these things I might never quite be over, but having it be like, oh, this is something that's not keeping me captive anymore. And so, you know, talking about it with a mental health professional, writing down your feelings so they sit somewhere, write about them every day, write some poems, whatever it is, I find creatively transforming. Sometimes I just take some paper and I like scribble on it because I wish I could draw, but I cannot. But something to get it out, I find for me personally, has been incredibly transformative. And yeah, and I would say for making it into a story, there's nothing wrong with writing it as a story right now, even though you're not past it. But it's usually best if you're sharing that story to wait until you've processed it, to wait until it doesn't make you feel activated. Does it make you cry? Doesn't wreck your day? At that point, when it's still at that point, have it just live in a book somewhere and then come back to it.
So as someone who just fully embraced themselves, what's the first thing that she did that was completely out of character for you that you're like, I'm just going to go for it?
Oh, that is a great question. So this is a slightly less PG answer. I took a burlesque class. Yes. And April, I cried at that burlesque class. You're talking about people worrying they're going to do the wrong thing. Hi, that's my greatest nightmare. And everyone was so incredibly supportive, so lovely. I will say, probably don't necessarily do what I did, which was like, you know what would feel like jumping out of an airplane? Going to a burlesque class. Because I've done ones that are smaller, but a challenge. But I went to it, and I will tell you, after that, nothing was as scary. If I could go back, I would lead up to that. But I was, you've never seen yourself cry until you've been in a dance studio where you can see mirrors at all. Like, you can really get a 360 experience of yourself crying. And the instructor, and I think that this is a lesson I took from it, and I think it's a great lesson for everyone. She looked at me and she went, you know, this happens all the time. Why don't you just go to the other room? And if you need a second, you can come back when you want. Or if you're done, that's great. Thanks for joining us. And then went right back to it. I didn't feel embarrassed. April, this might be the first time someone cried in a burlesque class. I don't know. Yeah, it might have never happened before. But she made me feel so comfortable. Like we were friends. Like this was no big deal at all. So not only did she like make me feel better, but it was like she told the class how to feel. They didn't have to feel sorry for me. They didn't have to run after me. I could just go, take a moment. I had some water and I came back. And you know what? I danced to a Prince song. Not well, but I danced to it. And that was a lot of that was this person. So as much as I don't always suggest doing what I do, which is often going to the most extreme, A small challenge will show you amazing things about yourself and also teach you so many things about people. The instructor's name is Coco Framboise. Sorry, my pronunciation is terrible. And truly, that woman changed my life forever. She's a wonderful dancer. She's an incredible person. I have told her this story. If she listens to this podcast, when she listens to this podcast, I hope it's not embarrassing that I have said about this story, but what a beautiful way to be. And I think about it once a week. She's inspired me for life.
So what's the next big thing you think you're going to do? Dumb burlesque.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. The next thing is I'm working on a book. So I've done 3 editions of a storytelling collection where I always have a story in it, but it's other people's stories as well, with the money going to charity, which has been a great experience. And I've learned so much. And now it feels like it's time for it to just be me. And I will tell you, I am super anxious about it. I'm very excited. But also, I've been journaling about it a lot because it's bringing up a lot of feelings. And like, what if it's not good enough? And what if I'm actually a terrible writer and everyone's just been nice to me all these years? And all these different feelings. But also every time that I take a step forward and do something that I've always wanted to do, my life gets better. If this had been 10 years ago and you had said, hey, do you want to be on this podcast and talk about yourself? I would have paid you money to not be on this podcast because I would have been too scared. I would have, you know, figured out a way to cancel. And now I'm having a great time.
I feel you. If you had told me 10 years ago I was just going to start a podcast, I would laugh and said,
yeah,
that is not my motif.
Yeah. And then look at, you know, I imagine it's brought all kinds of things to your life. You're a wonderful interviewer. You make people feel at ease right away. And like, imagine if you hadn't taken that plunge. What a shame.
I know, right? My son is like, I can't believe you podcast. Yeah. You don't know anything about podcasting. I was like, I know. I'm learning on the curve.
There we go. That, to me, that's the best thing. Now, you know, I like going to school for stuff is great, but one of the best ways to learn is to just try it. I had never published anything myself. One day I got in touch with a new friend that I'd met in an online storytelling show and basically went, hey, I have this idea and I like it and it's going to be so much work. And we can publish, neither of us know anything about publishing, but like I've read a couple articles and we know a bunch of wonderful storytellers. What if we did this? And because my friend Jeremy is wonderful, despite the fact that he had known me for about an hour, he was like, sure, I'm in. And we've learned. So it was in some ways like going to grad school. For this, my coaching ability has improved. My writing ability has improved. I've learned so much. The best way, in my opinion, unless it's like, I don't know, surgery, the best way to learn something is to do it.
I know that for those of us that are on the spectrum, we have certain quirks, like food quirks, texture quirks, and we've learned to embrace it. What's your quirk?
Oh, I have a couple of them. Let's see, anything itchy, like labels. I started sewing in like little, because sometimes it's early in the morning and I'm like, oh, what's the front side of this sweater? Because there's not a label in it. So I sew in like little velveteen bits, like little hearts in the back. So I could just grab something and go if I'm in a rush. But yeah, anything that's like as much as I say, show the seams, I will often cover seams with like soft fabric because that will just, I won't be able to concentrate. Like yogurt, like that kind of, I wish I could be a person that's like, I'll have a nice yogurt, but the texture, I just can't do it. It's anybody else that wants it, that's great, but I can't eat it. It just, I don't know what it is, but it's like, nope, can't do it. I mean, it's my brain. That's what it is, but yeah, can't do it.
So how has it been for you? Getting out there, now you were a comedian, now you're a storyteller, then now just going out there and just talking to people to grab their stories.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I used to get in trouble. Almost all of my report cards would say distracting and distractible. Because I always used to want to ask people questions. And I remember getting in trouble because we were about to turn to start math lessons. And then I wanted to talk to the kid behind me because he seemed sad. And the teacher was like, okay, we have to do math. I'm like, we can't. How is he supposed to concentrate? He's sad. Which, by the way, don't point out someone else's feelings in the class. I don't know if he wanted everyone to know he was sad. My heart was in the right place. But there we go. But it's all I've ever wanted to do is ask questions of people and hear their story. It's part of the reason I love TV and movies is there was just... It was people telling you their story. They would just, you would just flip on a thing and there was the story. So getting to do this is like the dream come true I didn't know was possible.
I don't even know how I can top most of my questions.
These have all been amazing questions.
If you had one thing that you would want to say to your older self, what is it?
To my older self.
That you're done working.
I guess I think it would just be like, good job, because it is. I don't know what my future is going to be, but I know that it's very easy for me and for a lot of people I know to talk themselves out of their accomplishments and what they've done is like, oh, well, I mean, this person's done that. And this person, I used to, you know, those like top 25 under 25 lists.
Yeah.
I used to, when I was coming up to them, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, what have I accomplished? And then I got older and it seemed to be so strange that that would be, you'd have to accomplish something amazing under 25. That just seemed like so much pressure. And so I think it is. It's the thing I try to remind myself of now of like, you're doing your best and you're working hard and we don't know what's going to come from that, but be proud of that and just be proud of your real, vulnerable, cool, weird, silly self and keep going.
Okay, my final question for you is, what mark would you like to leave on the world?
That's a great question. I would like to think that what I'm doing is making people less scared and making them see the beauty in themselves, that like, that just who they are right this single second is great, that they don't need to impress anyone, that just being themselves is enough. I once said to someone, because I was in a spooky Halloween mood, that if whatever is after we're dead, if I could be a grim reaper that comes up to people and makes them feel less scared, that is just like, you've had a good life. Come with me. I'm proud of you. That's what I'd like to do. And my friend was like, you know, you do that now, right? That's what your job is now. And I will tell you, I'm getting emotional now because I had to like take a break. My friend is very sweet, so I didn't have to do this, but I was like, I'm going to just cry a little bit right now. So I'm going to call you right back after I've cried for about 10 minutes. But yeah, it is. If I can have a small part in making people feel less shame and love themselves exactly as they are, it'll be a life well lived.
Where can people find you?
You can find me StoryStar Coaching. I'm also Aaron Rodgers Story Pro, and it's Rodgers with a D. Aaron Rodgers Story Pro on Instagram. Yes, if you just look up Aaron Rodgers, it'll suggest the football player. And I also am going to make a little page on my website for your listeners that have some little worksheets to start them finding their stories, to do some of the journaling I've been talking about that are just to get them started. So I will send that to you for your notes so people can start on that journey. Also, whatever way you want to start on your journey is great. But I find, especially as someone who's neurodiverse, having some guidelines to start makes it a lot easier. Because when it's like, you can do it anyway, I'm like, cool. I know you think that's freeing, but to me, it's very overwhelming.
Overwhelming.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, cool. I can do anything. Great. But yeah, so Aaron Rodgers Story Pro on Instagram, StoryStar Coaching, and also the Pathfinders Collective, which is the website for my collective. We've done 3 storytelling collections so far. Our 3rd and final one comes out April 17th with all the money going to Planned Parenthood. So if you want to look on that website as well, the other 2 collections are also available. The money goes to really good causes. 100% of the money goes to those causes. And the last thing I would love to leave everyone with is the same thing that I tell myself, and I would tell my younger self, is you have a wonderful story and someone needs to hear it, even if that someone is you. You never need to share it publicly. It can, as I say, live in a book, a notebook on a shelf, whatever it is. But letting out your stories is 1, a great way to connect, and 2, is a great way to get rid of the shame. And you don't need to carry that around anymore. You can let it go.
Erin, thank you so much for being on my podcast.
This was wonderful.
I know, this was fun.
Yeah.
Let's do this again.
Yeah. I think, April, you're stuck with my friendship now.
That's awesome.
Yay.
I think you're so cool.
Right back at ya.
All right. Thank you, Erin. And we'll speak soon.
Sounds great.
All right.
As we wrap up another awesome episode of Adulting with Autism, just remember, we're all in this together. Keep being your amazing self, celebrating wins big and small, and facing whatever life throws your way with a smile. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time, stay awesome and keep shining bright. Oh, and if you want to help our podcast grow, don't forget to share it with your friends, leave us a review, and hit that subscribe button. This is April Ratchford signing off from Adulting with Autism.